Good morning, everybody. Happy Halloween. Happy Monday. My name is Pete Lowenstein. I'm the Vice President for Distribution at NPR, and we are having today our first of what will be a continuing series of quarterly interconnects to keep everybody up to date on happenings with the Public Radio Satellite System, the PRSS. And there is an awful lot going on right now, so we have a lot of things to share with you. We hope you will call in with your questions and comments, and we have about an hour to spend with you this morning, but we will be doing this now on a regular basis quarterly just to keep you posted on all the new neat things that are happening around the satellite system and related areas. With me today in the studio, not in any particular order, I'll start with Dick Colas, who's our Director of Operations and Engineering for the Public Radio Satellite System, Ralph Woods, who's Deputy Director of Ops and Engineering, and Toby Puro, who's the manager of the NOC operations. And we also have Mitch Eaton, who's the Supervisor of Technical Systems for NPR Engineering. And we're here anxious to share with you all the goings-on and also hear from you to answer your questions. We have a number you can call us on. It's 866-751-9555. That's 866-751-9555. And you can also send a question to us on email if you'd prefer to do that. You can do that at prssforward@npr.org. prssforward@npr.org. And we have people who are standing by monitoring the email. So I was wondering if we should all give a blood-curdling scream here to get things started, but I think what I'll do instead is turn it over to Dick Colas to maybe start us off with an update on what's happening with the Press Forward project and anything else that's on your mind this morning. Good morning, Dick.
Good morning, Pete. Good morning out there in Radio Land. As you know, the PRSS Forward project is really a collection of four sub-projects, and many of you have heard us talk about this before. There are four blocks, Block M, Block O, Block V, and Block E. Block M is principally concerned with rolling out the new receivers, and everyone should have their receivers by now. There may be a few exceptions, a few stragglers, as well as updating the current NOC to be able to take advantage of these new receivers and all the possible services we can look forward to in the future. Block M is pretty much on time. Everything's out there. We're looking for a commissioning of the 4104s sometime early in 2012, probably right after the holiday season. And as you will remember, we'll run two networks for 6 months so that we will support the SR Pros and the SFXs, as well as the 4104s until approximately June. And at that time, we will turn off the tuning mechanisms for the SR Pros, and we will be relying on automatic tuning through the 4104s. And as you know, the Pros can be reused as standalone local tuning or manual tuning receivers for backup purposes. Block O is heating up quite a bit now. Block O is really the new equipment for the new building at 1111 North Capitol Street, and we are expected to be up and operating from that site in April of 2013. So we have begun building the transmission systems in an annex next to NPR. We've been ordering parts, and the racks are in place, and the engineers have started the construction of that. And we're working very closely with other technical groups on the coordination of the entire technical move to the new building. So we've got our hands full in those two projects. And the third project that is underway is what we call Block V. That is the ground equipment update project, formerly known as the ETRP the last time around. And we've been evaluating every station in the network and looking for those who need either complete replacements or repairs to their systems. And we have three engineers that have been working on that exclusively. We have a pretty good plan for moving ahead, and some of you will begin to hear from that group about maintenance and some possible upgrades to your system. So those are the first three blocks, M, O, V, and E, of course, is the move that is relative to all of us in operations. The first three projects are pretty much technically oriented, but there's a whole lot of people in distribution that support our technical operation, and we have to move them all to the new building. So by April of 2013, we will be operating out of 1111 North Capitol Street. We have a satellite dish already mounted there, looking at G16, and we light it up occasionally, but that is a confirmed location for us to be broadcasting from in the near future. That's about it. Pete, you got anything?
No, I would just say that I know that there has been a lot of creative thinking and concern about, you know, having a backup method to tune receivers when the new ones are online, and we're really pleased that we have we've heard from lots of folks about this. We obviously share the same concern that if there's a need to recover from a tuning failure, for example, at a station locally or even at the national level, if there's a problem, we have to have some way to provide a method for stations to continue functioning. And we think that the solution out there right now for using the legacy receivers in that mode is really a good one. So we appreciate all the input we've had on this, and I'm glad we have come up with a solution that looks like it should last us for quite some time.
And I think we should also mention, and Ralph, you might want to chime in here. Ralph was instrumental in getting us to install an internet streaming solution for a backup plan.
Yeah, we had something we contracted with an outside provider to do that, and we used it for the first time during the solar outage period that just ended with, I would say, very great success. There were a couple of stations who had some problems on the local end with port issues, and allowing them, once they enabled the ports that the system was using, they were able to get things just fine. But we're looking to this as a possible way to back up stations who don't have ISDN capability, both for things like solar outages. Obviously, we would make use of it to replace the old telephone coupler system we had as a standby for after 1998 when the satellite failed. That's obviously a very low-tech solution in this day and age. So we can now back the system up should we suffer that kind of a failure. Knock wood.
Knock woods.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. And as well as helping individual stations out who may be having difficulties with their downlink reception, or in the case of the Block V project, to helps carry stations over having their dishes replaced.
Let me jump in and give the number again if you have things you'd like to chat with us about, questions or comments about things. 866-751-9555, 866-751-9555, or you can send us an email at prssforward@npr.org. So, we have no calls or letters coming in at this point, but we have lots of things we can share with you. One area that we've also been preparing a lot of things here at the PRSS headquarters, but we've also been working with trying to get stations prepared for the upcoming EAS test. And I thought maybe while we have everybody assembled here, and including our good friend and colleague Mitch Eaton from the NPR technical crew, who is an integral part of NPR's role in serving the EAS function, that we would chat a bit about what the plans are. And if you have calls, we'd like to call in and chat with us about this. We'd love to hear from you too. So, Mitch, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. I don't know quite what I come unprepared to make extensive remarks. So I was...
Well, why should you be different than the rest of us?
I was hoping that if anybody listening did have questions, they'd take the opportunity to call into the number, which in good radio fashion would be 866-751-9555, if you have any questions on this.
I have a brief question. You mentioned the other day that people seem to be upset about a questionnaire that went out from the FCC?
Oh, the reporting requirements for the FCC, and the fact that the website that the FCC was having people go to is unsecured, so they're asking people to provide unsecured information over or personal information over an unsecured form.
Interesting.
Which would be an interesting thing. You can also do the old-fashioned way and report via postcard to them. So if you're not comfortable with providing your information, this is all stuff that is popped up on PubTech listserv. So if you're not comfortable with that, you can provide them with an index card and send it in to them with the pertinent information that they're requiring you, and you can get that at fcc.gov.
I'm sure everybody's probably aware, but I'll just remind you that the test is on Wednesday, the 9th of November. And what time is it?
It happens at 1400 Eastern Time.
Right, okay.
And they expect to send out an EAN, the header, and then that will trigger everything, and then they will provide between 2.5 and 3 minutes of audio. And then they say there will be no end of test message. It should be included, but it should go off the air after their message goes through that everybody should return to normal operation. And there are certain instructions, and if you haven't been to the FEMA website, you can do a quick Google search on FEMA and nationwide EAS test to get the information included there. And if you have a SAGE index, they have also provided certain information on how to adjust your box for levels so that everybody can be on the same page there, and what you should expect that way. And if there is not an end of message from the FCC, how we should provide you with one by quite simply performing a required weekly test after the national test, and that will then kick the boxes back out of gear, and everybody will resume normal operations at that time. So
there are some some special arrangements that have been made for this this test, and we've been in pretty close contact with FEMA in getting ready for what we can do to help with this, and there will be a special feed up on the Content Depot that would allow you to do a subscription to this. And this is primarily something that the FEMA group had thought would be good for this test, even though it's not something that's part of the regular the regular routine. Stations are presumably normally receiving these tests through some mechanism, but for those stations who are having some sort of difficulty, it was viewed that this would be a way to at least get the primary entry point services out to those that are relying on it coming down further down the pipe. And we're also working here at PRSS to try to find a more long-term enhanced solution that would be available all the time to help create a little better support for this at the national level. So there's both a short-term and a long-term thinking going on right here, and very closely coordinated with FEMA. 866-751-9555 is the number, and prssforward@npr.org is a place you can shoot us an email. So, seeing no calls coming in, either we've told you everything you need to know, or...
or you're not awake yet.
Or you're not awake yet. Yeah, it is a little early in the morning. We had some difficulty getting a studio. We had hoped to do this a little later in the day, but on ones we do coming up later, on the quarterly basis, we'll try and have more of an afternoon time slot that gives a little bit better access for folks on the West Coast and in places like Alaska and Hawaii. This is, I think, going to be available as a live with subsequent file feed, so those who are not able to actually hear it live as we do it can pick it up as a file delivery later on. Dick, did you have any further things you'd like to share about events on the press forward mode?
Well, one of the interesting groups that we work with every week is called the Technical group that is comprised of every technical group within the company. And that's pulled together by Marty Bloss, who is our Vice President for Broadcast and Technology.
Marty Garrison. Old Marty's dying. <There's,
laughs> sorry, Marty, wherever you are.
Which Marty one?
Marty Garrison, who is our Vice President of Broadcast and Technology. And he has the responsibility of roping us all in and moving us all down the street in an orderly fashion and making sure that all of the technical systems are up and running. And it's quite a big group. It's an interesting group, and there's a lot of talent in that room one day a week. And we've been moving along on time and on schedule, and I have to give Marty credit for that. He is a good taskmaster when it comes to a project of this size. And so far, everything, including the building plan, the technical plans, the move plans, the expense plans, the budgets are all coming together nicely, and we're starting to really think that about a year from now, we'll be moving into that building and finishing off the technical systems that will be online in 2013. So that's a continuing, ongoing story, and we participate in it quite frequently, and we have a big chunk of that to do ourselves. So as I said before, all projects are on time and on budget, and we're doing our best to keep it that way.
All right, we do actually have an email question that has come in. Let me see if I can scroll down this BlackBerry screen, which is rather compact. This is from David Benders at WBFO,
and hey,
he's interested in hearing some discussion about the audio output connectors. He says, let's see here. If you have analog or AES output connectors that can come here so we don't have to make these up. I assume he's talking about cable connectors. Is that the...
I'm not sure.
He's looking for a plug-and-play solution.
Well, if he used the DB9 connectors for the SR Pros, they're perfectly compatible. It should just be a swap, David. It shouldn't be a big deal. But if you're using the mini XLRs, you will have to go to a DB9 connection, and those are all documented on the PRSS org site should you need to have your engineer wire something up. Say hello to people in Buffalo for me.
Probably digging out up there today.
I don't know.
No? 866-751-9555 and prss@npr.org is how you can get in touch with us. We have daylight time shift coming up soon, unfortunately, depending on your point of view, I guess.
It's next Sunday morning.
Next Sunday. Anybody have to do anything special?
It should be set to run itself. We're going through the same procedures we've gone through the last couple of years for the spring and the fall. We've been looking at our schedule here in the NOC and through our automation switching system, and everything seems to be in place. We've done a lot of homework over the last few years, and when we finally got into Content Depot to make this work, and Ralph's got his fingers crossed, and so do I, that everything's looking good, and it's the fallback. Our computers say one thing, but what they see in the field, but effectively you're either going to have two 1 o'clocks or two 2 o'clocks, and either way, you'll have your programming through the night, and there should be no hiccups, again, with everyone crossing their fingers.
We've done this a few times.
Yes, in this system, and we think we've. Am I going to curse myself now when I say
yes.
How confident? Let's just say we seem to be happy with the process so far, and Ralph is knocking on wood.
Guardedly optimistic.
Exactly. That works. That works.
Okay. 866-751-9555 and prss@npr.org if you want to chat with us or send us a quick email question today. Let's see.
Do you want to say anything specifically, not necessarily to drag Mitch back into the fray, regarding the EAS test of the two transmissions that are in Content Depot? If anyone is interested in subscribing to them, if you just go to Content Depot and you search on EAS, it is both the EAS tests, which are the daily test right now up and through the 8th, that NPR and Master Control is originating. We are handing off the audio that they also feed off of the Squawk channel. But the actual test on the 9th is called EAS Test National. And you can subscribe to that if you're interested in monitoring to see what the feed's all about.
And one of the questions that we've gotten several times at the help desk over the past week or so is, well, okay, I've already got Squawk Channel. Do I need the Content Depot feed? And the answer is no, you do not. The only reason the Content Depot feed is there is for people who may not have kept their old ABR 700 receivers and retired them, or they have suffered a failure and they can't get them fixed. Then that gives you a backup plan to that. I mean, I had heard that the stations in Florida were being told that, oh, just go to your NPR station and get this, and we heard from stations saying, we can't do this.
This is Mitch again. There may have been some miscommunication in the early days of people. I understand there are special circumstances in Florida where FEMA in the past had provided a satellite feed to distribute things over the entire state that now is no longer available to them, and that there is sort of a scramble. If your local EAS system works, if you have a fair shot on your LP1s or your PEPs, then there's nothing that you actually really need to do here. We provide this as a backup for you, that if you are having a hard time, perhaps it's an added way of adding a little bit of redundancy there. It's not meant to replace your local PEPs. If it's meant to be in addition to that. So, if your stuff is working fine, it's working fine, and you don't need to fall back on us. And you know, we're there in case you do need us. So.
Okay, 866-751-9555 and prss@npr.org. We do have another email comment here. This is from Tom Devlin up at WGBH. Hey there, Tom. And his question is, what's the time frame for full implementation of Content Depot receivers, the new ones?
Full implementation. Well, we hope to commission the new receivers early in 2012. What that means is, if you've already got your receivers hooked up and you're listening to them and have wired them through your console and you're auditioning them, that's just fine. We're asking you not to count on those as your primary receiver yet. We want to make sure that all of the data we've collected over the last few months is examined and checked for errors. And what we have done is build a small network called a beta network, where we have backfeeds via the internet from all of the receivers at 25 sites. And we're pulling down the critical data daily and compiling it and looking for errors in tuning, errors in frequency, errors of all sorts. And we've been combing through that pile quite a bit recently, but we're only about halfway through it. So we want to make sure that this system is as good as it looks, and we think it is, and we're pretty sure that we're on schedule for a commissioning of these receivers. In other words, you can count on them for day-to-day operation in early January, and we'll be sure to make that announcement several weeks in advance so you know exactly what that date is.
And as I believe it's correct to say that virtually all of the stations have now received the new receivers. There may be a few that we still have some arrangements we're making, but I think the last of the big shipments went out in the latter part of September.
That's correct.
And so everybody should at least have received it, and hopefully you, as Dick says, you're hooking them up and auditioning them, getting used to how they operate. They are different. They have all of the legacy type functions and features, but lots of new neat things they can do as well. And I think probably everybody knows that this is a new generation receiver that includes a combination of both the streaming and the file based recording system included inside the file receiver and the stream receiver in one box, and they can interact with each other in some neat ways that we believe are going to be really providing some enhanced services for the system over time. In addition to that, there is a rather significant amount of data delivery that they can provide either in conjunction with the audio we're delivering to you or completely separate from that, just as unique dedicated data services that can be used for a variety of things. So we have high expectations for how much new functionality we're going to get out of these over time, and we've obviously had a good run with the units that are currently online for a number of years, and we look to these to be handling our requirements for quite a while going into the future.
We've got a question here from Randy Murdoch, WQCS in Fort Pierce, Florida. Can we get the IDC receivers to include drivers to work for Fleestone, audio over IP into receivers? Now, and this is a question that comes up from time to time.
I think he may be on the line. Maybe on line.
Let me see if I can. It didn't come up on the screen, but let me see if I can get him. Hello, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Ah, okay, good. Hi, welcome.
Yeah, the question is, we have the Wheatstone consoles here, and I see that the drivers for the Axia consoles are in the receiver. Is there a possibility we could get the Wheatstone driver so it would talk to our Wheatstone consoles audio over IP?
I am not sure of that answer today, but we did talk to Wheatstone a couple years ago at the NAB, and we were left with the impression that they thought that they could interface to that rather easily. So without calling Wheatstone, I don't know what that answer is today.
I talked to Wheatstone this morning, and they said they were trying to get IDC to use their drivers, but were not having any luck with them. So I'm guessing we need to have somebody do a little pushing, maybe?
I'll be happy to research that for you. We would have to know several things, but I think we would start with Wheatstone ourselves because we did speak with them once, and I don't know what their issue is. Clearly, we haven't talked with them in quite some time.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, thanks. All right, we don't have anybody queued up at the moment. 866-751-9555, and our PRSS forward at npr.org. Would be interested to hear maybe if there are some station folks listening out there who have in fact been exercising the new receivers and getting used to them, what you're finding, and any comments or tidbits you'd like to share maybe with some of your colleagues out there who maybe haven't gotten quite as far down the road with the new units as maybe you have. So if you've got anything you'd like to share on that, or if you have questions about things you've been encountering as you've been getting used to these new units, we have the brain trust here, or at least
a sampling
of the brain trust. Yeah. So give us a call or send us a note. 866-751-9555. I mentioned a minute ago that one of the neat new features in these receivers is the ability for it to deliver a significant amount of data. And Dick, I don't know if you would like to maybe spend a minute talking about that capability, but we're excited about this because not only does it offer a way to provide some significant enhanced metadata servicing of our traditional public radio clients for information that goes along with programs that you're not able to get right now through the current system, but it also has the ability to provide a lot of standalone data applications as well that can be either related to the normal work we do here in public radio, or it could also be something that provides a potential commercial revenue stream for both the network level and for the stations. So maybe chat about that for a minute. This is kind of new and exciting, and it's unfolding even as we speak.
Well, when we were looking at the next generation of receivers in Ottawa and talking to the folks at IDC, we noticed that they had a much bigger processor in a box called the 4104, and it's primarily designed for video, and video is a rather wide bandwidth device, so it performs a lot of cycles, a lot more than just delivering audio or delivering files. And the reason we went for this bigger box was because we thought of a way to utilize this as a data receiver as well as an audio and file receiver. And what this allows us to do is to set up tens of virtual data streams through the receiver and delivered through the Ethernet port to whatever device it's supposed to talk to on whatever network. So what we're doing is converting UDP multicast, which is our primary method of distribution, to TCP IP in the box so that it can talk to anything on any network. This gives us a great deal of flexibility in the internet age, and since IP addressing is ubiquitous now, gives us an awful lot to work with when we're talking with prospective clients or customers or those who find interest in distributing data throughout this network. So as Pete said, this is a good revenue generating possibility for us. And as you know, if we make money here, it really goes toward the expense of operating the distribution division in itself. So it's good for stations in that way. And other possibilities are that the stations could also share in that revenue. And we've been kicking the tires on this for a while yet. More to come in the future. Right now we are trying to get everything wrapped up as we promised by 2013, and we're still thinking about this at the same time. So when we have more information, we'll be happy to publish it and keep you in the loop.
It's those same data capabilities that are also stimulating a lot of delivery capability for many of the things that the Technology Research Center and NPR Labs Group have been working on in the way of accessible media. So for things like captioning services, for all sorts of things that would be, as I say, a benefit to enhancing the public radio experience are really primarily why these data services were envisioned and built in, but there also are things that go well beyond that. Let me give you the number again, 866-751-9555, and prssforward@npr.org is how you can get in touch with us. Got a question here from Michael Kluger, who's asking, is there any documentation available on the new added features that we're talking about here and on the PRSS plans for them? Well, there is documentation, obviously, in the sense that the receivers themselves, we know very much, as Dick was saying, what the overall capability is for these units to take data that we put through the system on any of these data channels and have it come out the Ethernet port on the back of the unit. So I'm not exactly sure. The added features at this point is the capability is there, the platform is there, or will be there when we've converted over everything and we're on, you know, on the new receivers as the primary receiver system. So the applications that would be taking advantage of that or exploiting that are still very much in the formative stages. But as I said, things like artist experience, which is becoming a big important thing, to go along with programming that comes down from national sources through the system. Things like artist and title information or even descriptions of what's happening on a particular program could be done in real time. We're talking, again, about captioning services that could provide a way for those who have hearing disabilities, that we would be able to provide a way for them to enjoy the richness of the public radio content that they've never had before if we are able to provide a captioning service. So a lot of these things are very much in the formative stage, and what's I think the best way to think about the data capability is that it's what would you do with it, really? And we've been asking that question now increasingly as we've worked with our board, our DI committee. We've explained how this works in general with them in some detail at the last committee meeting when they were here in September. And we also, on the regional meeting circuit that Mike Starling and some of his folks are attending and giving presentations, we're also talking this up there. So it's really a matter of there's a lot of data delivery capability, and we're interested to know beyond the things we've already thought of or that might be sort of in an early stage of development, what things others might want to use them for. Dick, did you have anything further to
well, we're talk about that? We're following HD radio, of course, and NPR Labs knows much more about HD radio than I do, but they recognize that this box has a huge potential to help them and help HD radio users do things like deliver album art. And you would think something like that is routine, but to deliver artwork takes a lot of bandwidth. There's a lot of bits in a picture. And they're coming up with other ideas for the hearing impaired, for the blind, for all kinds of uses that we would have never thought of. And so we think the port is there to be used, and we're working with them very closely on a lot of things they see. So as HD radio expands and its requirements expand, I imagine we will too.
Yeah, emergency messaging is another very definite possibility, both from the local or regional area as well as at the national level, where in addition to whatever audio would be delivered in that score, we have the ability now with these data paths to deliver significant amount of text information and even graphics if that's appropriate. So it's an exciting area that's just really starting to get serious consideration now that we have the capability that's been built into these boxes. Robin Cross at KCUR in Kansas City has sent a note and asks, is it okay to use the new receivers?
We request that you don't rely on them yet. And there's just a good practical reason for this is that we're still a beta network. And we do look at the equipment once in a while, and it takes a lot of time to coordinate a shutdown or some maintenance on a piece when the network isn't blessed yet. So we're asking you to rely on the old network for a little while longer. As I said, we're seeing some really good results from the data we've harvested, and we think we're okay, but we still reserve the right to pull down a piece of the equipment if we need to tweak or reconfigure and make sure that we are absolutely sound before we announce that we're ready to go on the 4104s. And as I said, that really starts to look like early next year.
Okay, we hope that answers your question. 866-751-9555 is the number, and prssforward@npr.org is the place you can shoot an email question to us. Any excitement going on in the ops area, Ralph?
Well, trying to stay on the air, I think, is what keeps us very busy these days. I keep track of the numbers and how we do, and at the risk of blowing this completely out of the water, we still have to get through today. But it is looking like October is going to be an absolutely stellar month in terms of our performance, in terms of delivery of service to the stations. As I said, now having said that, we'll just bang on our head a few more times, knock wood some more. We work very, very hard at this, trying to make sure that we keep... We try to catch problems before they happen. Toby, Ann, and I are monitoring the various listservs because oftentimes people will post things rather than call us to tell us there's a problem. But we try to catch things before it ever even gets to that stage. So I'd say this month we were on top of everything. And the good news is that there's some things that we managed to get fixed before you ever noticed. And again, we're proud of that one.
These guys really do work very hard. operations is one of those jobs that is extremely demanding, especially in a 24/7 operation and a network of this size and the amount of data and the amount of information we put out daily. And I haven't met two better than Ralph and Toby and Ann. That makes three.
One of us got slighted. I don't know.
Who's counting?
I'll take the hit.
And those of you who talk to them often realize how important they are to this network.
Thanks,
Dick.
Thank you, Dave.
My pleasure.
Yeah, we talked a bunch earlier about the voices that have been expressing concern about manual tuning capability not being something that's connected to the new receivers. And I hope everybody understands that the reason that manual tuning is not part of those receivers' lives is because they are a very different animal and work differently, and we need them to be functioning in the automated mode in order for them to provide all the functionality that we're building into to exploiting them. But we do recognize, as everybody does, that we need to have a really robust way to recover from really any failure, and tuning is one that I think people are understandably nervous, maybe is the right word, about, because we've had over the course of the years occasions when there have been tuning difficulties, and when that happens, it's always something that drives, I guess, stations into emergency mode. So we've been searching along with everybody else for how do we deal with the need to recover from tuning type problems with the system in the future when the new receivers are meant to be operated in the automated style. So Dick, could you talk maybe a little bit more about the solution that we have in mind here? And just since we've had such a significant amount of interest in this, I think it would be helpful to explain a little more about what we have come up with and the rationale.
Well, Pete has already told you why these receivers are so important to be locked to the network and work with the network head end to bring all those variety of things we've been talking about these receivers are capable of doing. So we came up with a backup plan, which was, since every station will have at least two SR pros on the day we commission the new receivers, that those pros could be repurposed for manual tuning, and this should give you what you've been asking for in terms of viable backup, since we have had a few tuning mishaps and every system will fail occasionally. This gives you the added comfort of having a fixed tune channel behind the automated service. And as we said earlier, there's always the internet streams coming out of Ralph's shop. All you have to do is make a call, and they'll hook you up right away. And so that gives you a second backup service. So we hope that this plan we put forward meets with your approval, and we've been hearing some positive feedback, so we think it is. Let us know if that's not true.
And we really believe that these units can serve in that mode, in that way, for quite a long time, a number of years, because we have a pretty good supply of backup units in our satellite repair depot, and we also have parts and things of that sort. So we think we can keep these units functioning for a while.
Yeah. We've done the research on parts availability, and you know, as when we built these things 5 to 7 years ago, we insisted on a parts inventory in Ottawa, and that's there for us to claim now. So we can keep these going for several years at least.
So let's see. I don't see any calls stacked up at the moment. 866-751-9555. We've been actually, most people have been, we've only had really one call. It's been all emailed today. So we're certainly happy to hear from you either way. prss@npr.org is the email address. And speaking of an email, Michael Kluger has sent another note here. It says, has any thought been given to making the new data delivery capacity available for delivery of a national-level EAS cap feed to stations in areas where internet availability is problematic?
That would be a very good solution.
That would indeed.
And I'm sure our friends at NPR Labs are thinking about this all the time. Yeah, I think there are a lot of good solutions. I think people are impatient, and that's understandable. But we have to get these receivers out operating and make sure they're stable, and then add these services that we've talked about for some time. We can create these services in the lab and experiment with things, but until we're very confident of their abilities, and in some cases very confident that the delivery will always be there, it's important for us to get this right. So more on that as we develop these ideas.
Yeah, and without trying to get anybody too excited that we've got this nailed. We have, in fact, been talking about just such a solution with FEMA for some time now. So we believe that's a possible thing that we can look forward to going down the road.
Yep, that'd be great.
We have about 15 minutes left, so we'll hang in here for a bit. We don't have a date yet scheduled for the next one of these, but as I said, you know, we have in the past tried to do these on a regular basis, but we are really trying to commit now to a quarterly schedule on doing just such things as we're doing today, just to have an opportunity to chat with you, hear from you, and share with you whatever is going on, because we do have so much happening here. It's relatively invisible to all of you, but the work that's going on right now to get the distribution folks, the PRSS crowd, along with everybody else here at NPR, ready to move into a new headquarters building in 2013 is really heating up. I don't know if any of you have been to Washington and had a chance to see the new building that's being partially rehabbed and partially built from scratch. But it's well above ground at this point. There was a lot of digging and pouring of concrete well below, you know, where you could really see it easily from street level. But now it's really up and coming together. And we were told that once they come above grade, things would start moving pretty quickly. And I think they were right on with that. So I think we actually start our plan now as part of this press forward block. E, is it, or O? M-O-V-E, anyway.
It's Block O.
Block O. Yeah. The Block O schedule is we're actually building out in a vacant area within the current building some of the new hardware systems that will be actually lifted up and transported to the new facility once it's ready to accept it. Once they've got all the drywall dust and the basic, heavy construction finished. So we're working even right now with building out the early stages of the new system that's been designed to move into the new facility. And it's an enormous undertaking, but I can tell you that we certainly are looking forward to it here. We've had our distribution division has been split up in a number of different locations for probably, 10, 12 years now. And so it will be great to get everybody back together under one roof and in a brand new facility. So we're very much looking forward to that. And we're doing everything we can to have that transition be completely invisible to both the folks who put stuff into the system and those who take it out. But it's an enormous undertaking for both us and for the rest of the organization. But we're on target and on budget and on time, as Dick said earlier. So we don't have all that much time left. I think we actually will start working in the new building to build the systems out in, about a year from now, right?
About a year, yeah. We'll be given about 6 months to do everything that distribution has to do technically, and that includes building the system and moving it down and debugging it, as well as building a brand new NOC and moving the satellite depot. And one interesting thing about the NOC that Ralph might want to address is that this is a brand new design. The IP protocol has come a long way since the first NOC was built and then the second NOC, and now it's become an integral piece of almost any studio and any control center. And that allows us to do some things a little differently as far as monitoring and controlling the system. And I'll let Ralph tell you what it's principally his idea and how this is coming together.
Well, one of the things we've been working with the a contractor on is the concept of what we call the video wall. I've seen this at a number of plants around. We took a tour out to Discovery Television, and I took one look and I said, I want one of those. And it was a large, and that was actually their downlink control room and all sorts of status monitors and all like that on one big monitor on the wall. And they could partition it any way they wanted to. If something came up red, they could go to it, bring it up, and, you know, drill down into it. We're working with our software team right now on our own version of what we're calling a dashboard. I'm promised delivery early next year. I cross my fingers a lot around here. And once we have that, again, as I said earlier, we go looking for things to go wrong ahead of time, and this will be a good tool for us to try to find these things out before they become problems that you notice at the stations, which is our goal. We just want to stop things and keep things running smoothly before they turn into problems that take you off the air or otherwise make you want to pull your hair out. So the idea of this video wall is to have all sorts of data available to us. We're looking for it as, say, for instance, audio metering, virtual audio metering on it. We're looking, obviously, for time. We're looking for weather information, things we can put up, closed-circuit TV feeds of, you know, what's going on in the weather outside, because we're moving to a facility where we no longer are close to a window. We're going to be in the middle of the building, but it's vitally important for us to know what's going on outside in terms of the weather, especially if it's threatening in some way, shape, or form. So all of these things are going to, we hope, wind up on the wall. So instead of a row full of racks like I've been used to forever in this industry, there's going to be just the video monitors and very limited patching.
Well, and for a facility like the NOC, the Network Operating Center, the amount of stuff that's flowing through there at any given moment on any given day is really mind-boggling in some ways. It's just an enormously busy place with different functions that are happening all the time, and having the ability to monitor things carefully is probably one of the most important design factors for a facility like that.
Especially in terms of the monitoring of the performance of the computer-based equipment,
yeah,
and such, making sure that stuff, you know, isn't that somewhere down in the database there's not a flag that's going, oops.
Well, speaking of flags, we have another question here that's just come in on our email address, again from David Benders. Hi again, David. He says the new units could include, this is a question, the new units could include Squawk Channel, ? Will it change the way I receive Squawk now or in the future?
I don't think we've decided that yet, but we are working with the news people on a solution for the Squawk Channel, and I think that decision is soon to be made. I'm not sure exactly when, but I understand it's right around the corner.
Squawk Channel right now is on the old AVR 700s, I believe, right? And those are definitely at a point where their end of life has come and gone and a while back.
It's also available to member stations over a streaming encoder.
Right.
So there's a computer network way to do that.
I would say hold on to your SR Pros, David. I think we'll find some uses for those yet that will come in handy.
Yep. Okay.
Can I throw in one thing?
Yeah, go ahead,
just
Toby.
For everybody's edification. We continue to do upgrades to Content Depot, and we've made a number of improvements over the last few months. Ability to preview audio files on the program page, the aggregating of downloading files from an episode page, and we have more work that's being done behind to help stations for what they've been looking for. We keep listening. They can contact PRSS Help if they're having any particular problems or questions, and we're always willing to look at stuff, and we'll keep working on it. We haven't given up. We keep trying to add to make it better for everybody.
And to that end, we encourage stations to send us your ideas, things that you really would like, because we have frequent meetings where we're discussing issues just like that and then trying to put them into the priority chain of, you know, stuff that needs to be done, which obviously is a big list. But the more feedback we get on a particular topic, a particular item, we can say, oh, this is more important to stations than that one is. Because
go higher in the queue.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And we are regularly putting information out to you, which I hope you have been getting and that you've been paying attention to. It's probably particularly important right now for you to to watch for the PRSS Forward newsletters that come out on a regular basis. They do include lots of updates and new information frequently, or when we hear a trend or a pattern of questions that have come into us, we try to address those as frequently asked questions, because they are frequently asked questions. And also, we post a lot of that information up on the PRSS.org website for you. And there's another newsletter that comes out regularly that's, again, another place where we share happenings around the PRSS world, and that is the Espresso newsletter that should also come to you on a regular basis. So we urge you to sort of pay attention to those, but particularly right now, the PRSS Forward newsletter is one that we really encourage you and to share around with your colleagues when those come in. We have just a few minutes left, and I'll give you the number one more time to see if there's anybody who's just come alive, maybe as you move towards the West Coast. 866-751-9555 is our phone number here, and our press forward at npr.org, PRSS forward at npr.org is a place for questions. As we are in the waning moments here, are there any other points we have missed today that we feel? I mean, there's so much going on. I'd maybe follow up on Toby's thought for just a moment to say that you're exactly right. There has been an awful lot of work that's been done, particularly over the last year, to take the feedback we've been getting from stations and producers about enhancements or improvements or bug fixes that they would like us to make in the Content Depot portal software, and to try to do what we can to improve the user experience when they are interacting with the Content Depot every day as part of their work. And I think I would take an opportunity to give a shout out to Ron Walker and his Distribution Information Systems group, who have the primary responsibility to actually come up with the software enhancements that ultimately translate to making, we hope, your life a lot easier. And we've taken quite a bit of understandable and justified criticism over the last few years because of, you know, many of the warts and deficiencies in the Content Depot, but we think we've also now been seeing regular comments coming in that have been talking about how much people are noticing the improvements that have been made and actually finding it, making it a lot easier for them to do their jobs. So that is the music to our ears that we can't hear often enough. Seeing no further calls coming in, and not necessarily trying to stretch this out to the nth degree, I guess we will, as they say at the auction house, going once. Going twice.
A brief plea to those who will be attending the PREC this year. We're looking for topics since there's so much going on. We need to know what you want to hear this year, and that we're looking at travel budgets pretty closely too. So whatever that information is you're looking for will determine who comes and addresses you at that meeting. So drop us a note on PRSS Help.
Okay, we have a call coming in, actually, in the 11th hour here. Dick Dennis at KIOS. Hey, Dick.
Good morning.
Good morning. We only have about a minute and a half left, so.
Okay, well, this is a quick question. I was wondering when the new receivers will be available for programming through Content Depot so we can play around with them a little bit.
You can do that now. We're just saying that you shouldn't count on those for your main receivers to your air chain until we commission them in early January.
Okay, great. Yeah, the last time we tried to program, all we could get through was music.
I'm trying to tell you something.
I would call the help desk if you're having trouble with that, and they'll put you through it.
That's been a month ago.
Oh, it may have changed by now.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure. You bet. Yeah, your subscriptions from your current receivers should migrate over once they've been online for a little while. So that maybe you tried running them a little bit too early, and that some of that stuff had not made its way into your new boxes. So we are just really coming up on the end of our hour with you. We appreciate very much all your calls and particularly your emails. We've had a pretty good round of questions and comments today. So we look forward to talking with you again probably sometime in January. And for now, we'll say this is signing off from the PRSS Closed Circuit Interconnect. And this has been a show not for broadcast. And again, thank you. This is Pete Lowenstein in Washington, turning you back to your regular programming.